alone. If it means I don't have to play your crazy games no more. You're the most precious thing I've ever seen, but I ain't gonna let it slide when you're mean to me.
That's right, Sam Rayburn. Be mean to me. Low budget live. Not so live. Lucas Nelson and the Promise of the Real. Willie Nelson's son. Digging it right now. He's been on my radar for a while, but I haven't been hadn't been all over it. And my buddy Andy the other day said, "You better jump on this." So I've been killing that lately. What I did not kill was Sam Rayburn. FLW Tour kickoff, and it was bad for me. It was really bad. I really don't know what to say about it. I've waited to do a podcast about it, and sucks. Really sucks. But what doesn't suck is today... Today, on this very day, we are going to have Mr. Sam Rayburn, Terry Bolton. The first winner of the season is going to be calling in. And I talked to Terry for a little bit yesterday. And I can just tell you right now that when he goes to talking about this tournament, he's got some interesting stories. I had to stop him yesterday. I was like, I want to hear him. I want to hear him on the show. But very, very, very cool. And super proud for this guy, veteran dude, won tons of money, barely missed winning in 06 at Kentucky Lake, and never has a win, you know, until Rayburn this year, and he was almost going to retire last year, so at the end of last year. So very cool that to have him on. I've been knowing Terry for a while, and he's one of the most gracious, kind guys out there on tour, so awesome that he's going to be on Low Budget Live on this fine Friday, January 18th. And I'm already looking ahead to Florida. You know, I gotta turn this thing around and try not to suck again. Rayburn threw me for a loop, man. And I think it's sometimes it's okay just to give up, as D Money says. But... man, I worked my butt off in practice and thought I thought it was tough. And it was. I mean, you can look at the down through the field. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was a grind, which I hate saying, but it was if you weren't on the deal. It was typical winter. They were really piled up when you found them. And I had a horrible practice. First day of practice, I had caught three keepers, I should say. And got five bites on one place, and then I fished the rest of the day and only had one more bite. Second day of practice, I ran that deal, graphing, looking, kind of like the guys ended up catching them, man, and I never found them, and I kind of got spun, I'll be honest. And water's in the trees, in the bushes, it's in the 50s, and it just didn't make sense to me that if I couldn't get bit out, why I couldn't get bit up. And they were in between, and I just freaking missed it all over the place. And the last day of practice, I catch a 7-pounder, a couple more good fish on a spinnerbait, and so I'm thinking, well, I can get some bites, and I caught the 7-pounder flipping in some flooded mesquite trees, and I thought, well, you know, had a couple more bites doing that I shook off, and it was just. I don't know. It led me on a wild goose chase. And so the first day I started on this little grass spot I had, and I catch four. The four I freaking weighed in really quick. And, you know, three on back-to-back-to-back casts, as a matter of fact, on a Carolina rig. And leave there about 9:30 thinking, man, I got all day to catch one more or two more, you know, thinking I'll catch me a big one flipping or spinnerbaiting. And I never had another bite all day. All day. And I don't know if I just picked, you know, I was running water. I saw a lot of guys doing the same thing I was doing. I didn't look at the standings to see how they did. But, you know, flipping and spinnerbaiting the old bank line. So where it flooded, there's a lot of hay grass. really thick grass, and it was flooded over that, and those fish were kind of, you know, laying in that. And that was something that we figured out in practice. Castledine really got on it, and, you know, he had a rough tournament too, and so did Cecil Russell. And we kind of, you know, comparing notes, and that was something that we thought would play. And Russell caught an 8-pounder the first day to help him have 18. Then he weighed 3 the second day. So, like I did. But I never got another bite, man. And second day, I start in the grass, and I catch 3. Boom, boom, boom. Like, by 8:15, I got them 3. Then I weighed in. I got 3. And I go running around, throwing my spinnerbait again at, like, 9 o'clock, running all new water, and I lose 2. But, I mean, nothing that would have helped that much in the calls. You know, they moved you up a little bit. But, you know, one that I never saw, and one that was like a 2-pounder. And then I lost one on a shaky head late in the day. But after 8:15, I never boated another bass. And we got the film crew. You know, I got the film crew. Hayden Decker was with me doing the traveling circus thing. So it's all going to be on camera, hopefully coming out next week. And just brutal, man. It was brutal. I've been pissed off, and I've been sad, and I've been through every range of emotions, and I know that I'm very fortunate to get to be out there and to get to do it, but that doesn't make it suck any less, to tell the truth. But I don't know. You know, on to Toho. My record in Florida is fairly decent. I like Florida. I won't say I understand it, because I think that it's just a different animal. I read an article this morning. Andy Morgan said, you know, I had a quote that said there's bass fishing and there's Florida bass fishing. And that's true. So depending on the weather and depending on everything else, you know. But I know how to catch them down there, I feel like. I know, you know, it's simple fishing. And last year at Okeechobee when I caught them, that was the deal, just being simple. So, you know, swim jigging, fishing, you know, pitching around, zoom fluke sticks and trick worms, and you know, there may be some Carolina rigging stuff on some muscle bar kind of deals, and you know, but square billing, throwing me some 6 cents 50x's out there, some 80x's, and it's what I like to do. You know, there'll be some chatter baiting, some spinner baiting maybe, but just depends on what phase the fish are in when we get down there. But we'll dang sure know what phase they're going to be in, because the Bass Pro Tour is fishing right on top of us. Everybody will be glued to that. That's in the tour, so that'll shake things up a little bit, change things for us. But I'm looking forward to getting down there. I've heard the water's a little low, but I'm hoping for, you know, for good weather. We dodged a bullet though at Rayburn. It's hard to complain. Other than the 2 days of the tournament, weather was in the upper 60s and like 72 the last day of practice for January. Because when they scheduled that, I thought, man, it's gonna be an ice storm, which we had to deal with the high water. So we didn't just get out of terrible conditions by any means, but it was nice for January. It was nice and you know, upper 40s, low 50s. You know, we had some cold wind during the tournament. And it was dang sure not comfortable by any means, but we dodged those really bad temps that we've got coming to Tennessee this weekend. It's like 60 degrees outside right now. It's going to be 20 on Sunday. Interesting weather. And hadn't fished since I've been home. Been hanging out with the family. We've had ball games every night with the kiddos. And actually going to see the Tennessee Vols play tomorrow for my boy Charlie and Ryder's birthday. We're going over Brad Knight. Big shout out to BK for hooking me up with some primo tickets. BK, the man, who actually has a commercial on the Vol Radio Network, which trips me out every time. BK. But we're going over in the morning to do that. So it's been just hanging with the family, playing some Mario Kart on the Nintendo Switch. And last night, Harper and I made a late night run to Walmart and actually bought a new Super Mario game. So holler at your boy if you know what that's all about. Some Super Mario U. And been playing that a little bit, you know, eating Oreos, being depressed. Speaking of Oreos, still hanging in there on this fat ass challenge, and you know, started around 215, 217, and I'm down to 191. holding strong right there, trying to get to 185. That was the goal, but haven't been able to exercise as much as I want to. But we're getting there, man. I feel pretty good, and we're working on things. So get all that worked out. Feeling better and head to Toho, and hopefully turn around. You can have a bad tournament. You can have two bad tournaments, really, and make the cup. You just, you got to catch them. And I didn't. And I got me served up a big dose of humble pie because I thought that I'd go down there and get me a check. And you're always that confident. But I'm that confident going into Toho, regardless of what happens down there, I feel like I'll catch them. I know I can compete at this level. I've done it, I've mixed it up, made some cuts, got some checks. But I really want to freaking win. I really want a top 10. And speaking of which, big shout out to Sam George, who announced his FLW career on Low Budget Live and went down there and knocked out a ninth place finish. Sammy, who said he wasn't catching him in practice, blasted 28 pounds the first day. Blasted him. So real proud of Sam for going down there and catching him. But as far as me, I'm not proud of my performance. But I am not scared to talk about it. I'm not going to make excuses. Like I said, I made a post about that. It wasn't one of those so-and-so was on my spot. I did watch Brian Thrift catch him the first 2 days really good, about, 500 yards from me. That wasn't fun, but they found a mother load of them, man, in a spot in the grass, and he drilled them. Alex Davis and I were on a little place, and Alex kept saying, he's got another one. He got really old. Thrifty. Got really old. But yeah, no excuses. You either catch them or you don't. And I didn't. I was in that group. And it'll be turned over on its head when we get to Florida. There'll be guys that caught them there that don't catch them. I just got to make sure that I'm in the group that catches them and hopefully rebound back with a big tourney down there with a flipping stick and some big heavy line and doing what I like to do, just soaking my arm around. But we'll see. We will see. Like I said, Traveling Circus went awesome. It actually, my wife, the triple threat, Marissa D., was actually asking me if it was a distraction, and it wasn't. It really wasn't. Having the camera boat there was... It was different, but it wasn't a distraction like I thought it was, and it was worth it, I think. And I think we got a lot of good stuff on the water, a lot of good stuff off the water, and I'll be anxious for everyone to see it. Hayden's working on it now, getting that thing edited down, and it'll be on my YouTube, Facebook, FLW's YouTube, and FLW's website very, 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 very soon. So be on the lookout for that, all of you LBL faithful listeners out there, which I very much appreciate. I'm excited about it. And it went so well that I do think I'm going to expand it into something else this year after the tournament season, or maybe in between some tournaments, film some other stuff. Got to work out the deets on that, but I think it could be cool. One thing's for sure, I don't know how much saltwater activity will be on there, because every time I post saltwater stuff, everybody that follows me seems to hate my guts. It's amazing, but apparently I just attract the bass fishermen. Apparently, so, which is all good, but I love to saltwater fish. So open your mind, y'all. Open up. Redfish are cool. Red snapper are cool. Amberjack are cool. Sailfish, all that stuff's cool. I think the deal is that people don't have access to it. Maybe, I don't know. You can drive. You can fly down to the beach. You can catch them just like I can. I understand that's difficult for some people, and it's just easier to go bass fishing. But I'd like to film a redfish deal the way we caught them this fall. I think it'd be really cool. Really, really cool. But that's pretty much it. Rayburn sucked for me on to Toho. My equipment was on point, not to go straight sponsor plug, But that freaking Evan Root is truly on that 520L is a beast, man. I love driving that thing around. I normally kind of putt around in practice, but man, I was like flying everywhere, all over the place. It's really the motor for that boat, in my opinion. And that's, you know, it's not fair. I haven't ran the new Mercury, but and a lot of guys are bragging on that thing too. But that thing was, Evan Reed was fire. It was really, really cool. Enjoyed running that thing around. But everything, electronics and everything was on point. So no issues, which is always a breath of fresh air with a new boat. You never know, because we were running wires and rigging everything. You never know. But everything was on point down there. Everything was on point. If you hear something in the background, it's the Triple Threat. She's getting ready to go to a basketball game. She's in here behind me, just curling her hair or something. I hear it squeaking. It sounds like a mouse, but I'm in the recording this in the Low Budget Live Studios, aka at my desk at my home office, which is also in my bedroom. So say hey, Triple Threat. Yeah, there's a Triple Threat right there. She's here. She wouldn't do the podcast with me. We got too much going on. But the Triple Threat is here. The Triple Threat, we'll try to get her on next week. If we don't have a ball game every 5 minutes where I can peg her down. And still an update on, you know, post-Christmas update, still no hot tub Triple Threat. Still no hot tub Triple Threat. So for those of you keeping up with the hot tub Triple Threat, you can mark it off. We're 3 weeks into the new year, and no, I've had some solo hot tub time, no Triple Threat hot tub time. So for those of you keeping score, I killed it at Christmas, no Triple Threat. I don't know. We'll see how that shakes out. I'm gonna have to tighten up around here, I guess. She said, we got to drive like 2 hours for a basketball game today, which is fun. Very, very, very fun. Very fun. Very fun. But fishing world's kind of quiet. FLW kicked things off. We've got one winner for the year, but it's fixing to get busy, busy. There's a Bassmaster Open, I believe, next week at the Harris Chain, and there's the Bass Pro Tour on top of right before us, and then you've got the Costa kicking off at Okeechobee. And I saw something like the Open's got like 226 boats in it or something at the Harris Chain. Holy crap, people are trying to get them some Bassmaster loving. And I'm sure the Costa will fish 250. They always do, 225, 250. So everything is gearing up, kicking off full steam ahead. Everybody's waiting on this Bass Pro Tour. It's going to be interesting to see. I've talked to a couple guys that are in it, and I think they're nervous. They got some butterflies for a few different reasons. And, you know, the rules, I've heard some of the rules. I mean, they're going to go by the MLF stuff with landing fish and can't touch the carpet, can't touch you. And, you know, if we're going to be honest here, I think the best method of conservation for getting a fish in the boat is going to be a net. So I don't agree that snatching them up with your hands and almost getting trebles in you and everything else is necessarily the best way to conserve the resource, but whatever. It makes for really good TV, and I think that's ultimately all that matters. But I saw that Evan Rude came on as a sponsor of that, and they're going to call it the First Fish Moment or something along those lines, and show people how to properly land bass, because apparently the rest of us don't land them the right way. Apparently not. But I think a landing net is, you know, I sling them in. We're hooking them right in the damn face. You put a trocar right to their dome, and then we care about them after that. I mean, obviously we take care of them. We G-juice them. You put them in your live well. You run your oxygenator. You do all that. But my God, at the end of the day, we're jerking them out of their home. They're just down there chilling. And we drop a dang old monster worm down there and get bit and snatch his face. But then we're like, we take care of the fish. That's so stupid. Just my opinion. It matters to me. But, yeah, I read something about that, that MLF anglers take care of them the very best way. Everything will be the best, that's for sure. But we'll be glued to the live coverage. FLW anglers will talk about it or not. But, you know, they're fishing Toho. It's going to be the best pre-fishing we can get. And everybody will be in the same areas. It's really going to cause some crowds, I'm sure, if there's certain areas they blitz them in. But anxious to see my buddy JT Kenny and what he does on there, an analyst, and it's going to be cool to see all of it shake out and very interesting. I personally would not like having to snatch up a bass with my hand without being able to pin them against my body and all that. It's just silly, but you're turning them loose. Anyways, I heard that this week and I was like, what? It's cray. Completely cray. Fixing to have Mr. Terry Bolton on here. Mr. DT Crankbait himself, Mr. Rapala, depending on where you're at in the world. Who, by the way, if you haven't seen, he made a really funny video this week where he went to his local tackle store and he tried to, he acts like he's buying crankbaits and he puts his big cardboard check up there to pay. And it was really funny. Really, really funny. Terry is a good one. I had to weigh in behind his 33 pounds and it was so impressive. I think that's the biggest stringer I've ever been in person for in my life. I was trying to think. I've been around some 30s at Gunnersville, some high 20s, but I think that was 33 is up there for me in person seeing that. I've dang sure never caught a bag that big. I've caught some upper 20s. I've never caught me an old 30-something pound bag. It's impressive. I saw 29 a smallmouth weighed in one time on Pickwick. That was intense. Like the circus. Dad jokes. Dad jokes for days. So we're going to get Terry on here and pick his brain a little bit. I figure people will be interested in that. I'm actually going to try that after every event. And it just depends on who wins and if I can get contact with them. But I really want to get winners from events on the show like all these other shows do. Have a little simple one-on-one conversation with them. I feel like that's cool to me. Hopefully it's cool to the listeners. So Terry's a friend of mine. I texted him. He said he would do it. And let's call him. Let's get my man, Terry Bolton, on the phone right now.
Luke Duncan.
What are you doing, Terry Bolton?
Well, I'm really not sure.
You're not sure?
Getting to that age now where I'm not sure, you know how it is.
No, Terry, I don't. I'm not a veteran bass snatcher like you are.
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with being a veteran bass snatcher. It's just getting older.
I got you. Well, I did. One of my favorite quotes from you on the weigh-in stage was you said, "Man, I was just kind of ready for it to be over. I was tired." And I was like, I totally understand that.
Yeah, I was kind of like Forrest Gump. I'm tired of running.
Yeah, I want to go home. Exactly. Exactly.
That's kind of me. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Caught, you know, more bass than I caught all last year combined in like 2 days. But I was still ready to go home. I was tired.
Well, and I don't think people realize that. I talk about it a lot on here. The physical demand. Tournament fishermen get it, I think, but until you fished a multi-day tournament with multi-day practice after you travel 10, 11, 12 hours, it ain't for the faint of heart.
No, it's not. It's not. And you know, I've taken a few friends of mine practicing with me for Costa events and stuff here on Kentucky Lake through the years. And, you know, and these guys are, you know, hard workers, pipe fitters.
No doubt.
You know, construction workers, guys.
Real
work.
Work
pretty hard.
Yeah.
And in sweat, and, you know, and I've taken them out with me in the summer practicing, you know, 12, 14 hours, daylight till dark. And they were like, I'm never going with you again.
Yep.
It's not a, they said, it's not, this isn't fishing. This is a survival contest.
Yep. That's exactly, you know? Right. So yeah.
It is different. It is different. And again, if you ask me to go do a workout that a basketball or football player would do, I'm sure I couldn't do that.
No, not at all. we'd be dragging up the rear. I think Andy Morgan could probably do it though. He's so Missy works him to death, looks like.
Yeah, he might. I don't know. Now if it was a walking contest, I promise you, he can outwalk anybody.
Really?
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course, he hunts and he, it comes to walking up and down hills and walking, that doesn't bother him at all. Mm-hmm. He's striking off, and of course one of his steps, I got to take three to keep up with.
Oh yeah, them long legs.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So it was weird for me. Of course, I've gone through this 2 years in a row. So Strader left me and went to the Elite Series, which me and Wesley were big mm-hmm. buddies. Still are, but we don't get to see each other as much, talk as much, but ran around together, room together. You and Morgan have been buddies for a long, long time, and Suggs. I mean, we've all known each other, and y'all have been out there a heck of a lot longer than me. I'm in, going into year five here, but known each other for a long time. Was it weird not having him there at an FLW?
Yeah, and I told my wife that, too, before I left, or, about a month before I left. I said, the weird thing to me is that, all the guys that I started fishing with, and Jim Tutt and I talked about that during the top 10. Of course, Jim's been doing it as long as I have.
Yeah.
But
and is one of the good guys.
But for the most part, all the guys that I started with in the 90s, they're all either retired, quit, or moved on to another circuit.
That's a fact.
But when I won, Andy, Suggs, they all called me and text me and message me, and I know they were all, Andy said the number one thing that he regrets is he wasn't there to see
it. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
And we've all shared in of each other's, successes and failures through the years and life and in fishing. So, it's
no doubt.
You don't do this, you find after you do it 20 some odd years, you don't do it because for the fame and fortune and glory. You do it for your friends. They become like family to you.
I agree with that. I say at the bottom of all this, of course, obviously doing podcasts and the social media stuff all the time that I do and all that, I enjoy that, and I enjoy trying to help grow the sport, to a new generation or whatever through all that. But if you take all that away from me and I couldn't do it anymore as far as fish the tour and all that, I would miss the people.
Yeah, you miss the people.
Yeah, tenfold.
You miss the grind of the road.
No.
You might kind of miss fishing a few of the lakes,
kind of. if we could hit them at good times every now and then.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Other than Rayburn, where you just caught a million pounds.
Yeah, I mean, but it's the people that you miss. And it becomes more like a family. So,
oh, yeah.
And that was the weird thing about this year starting out, that a lot, some people left. We have a lot of new people.
A lot of new faces.
And I said that's the thing, too, that always I become fascinated with is now we probably arguably have the biggest group of young and upcoming fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to looking at these kids like Sam George and all those that I remember when I didn't get tired and I was hungry. And I'm 48 now and I've got arthritis. I get tired.
From cranking them plugs.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm ready to go take a nap, but I remember those days when I was that and I'm thinking, man, I got my work cut out for me here. But the beauty of the young guys and what makes them so dangerous, they just don't know it yet. They'll figure it out 10 or 12 years from now, is they don't know anything.
That's exactly right. I was a better fisherman, I say this all the time, at 19 and 20 than I am now.
Yeah,
because you overthink things.
When I first started the FLW tour in the 90s, I knew how to ledge fish, I knew how to flip and throw a spinner bait, and I knew how to throw a topwater bait,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
That's it.
And I did those things everywhere we went, whenever it was applicable, and I did better.
Yep.
But when I learned how to drop shot and shaky head, and then the next thing you know, I had 4 or 5 years, I could have caught my butt with both hands.
Yep.
So.
I understand. I try to do too much at times, I know. And
sure.
But I will say for me at Rayburn, and you and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, but for me, I'm a flipper, I'm a spinnerbaiter, and my biggest bites I hadn't practiced were doing that. And I missed the deal, the wads of fish that you guys all caught, and I was close to where they were, but not, you know, not on the money. And I've tried to, last year I tried it and had a, you know, had a decent year, had a couple bad ones, but I tried to simplify my fishing again last year. I'm like, you know what? You're a jig fisherman. Yeah. You're a spinnerbait fisherman. You know, you're a shallow guy. Go do that. And I caught a seven-pounder the last day of practice and shook off a couple more flipping them bushes. And I said, hey, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it just didn't work out. But I'm out of my comfort zone in that deep grass, Carolina rigging grass. I've just never done that very much. And I tried to make it work for 2 days of practice. But you said something interesting to me yesterday. Tell the story of how you found that mega school, as people say, of fish in that grass. That was cool.
You know, from my earlier years of experience at Rayburn, I knew and I'd been there when it was high in the 90s and 2000. We went quite a bit for Bass Invitationals and FLW win. You know, it seemed like we win every year in February. So I was there. There were several years there. I can't remember exactly the date, the time, but when it was high, it wasn't this high, but it was, you know, 5-6 feet high.
Okay.
And I knew inside grass lines, I always, the FLW tour went there 1 year, and I was always really good at finding those hard spots on those inside grass lines. And this is an honest goodness story. We went there for an FLW tour event, and I did pretty well. I think I finished in the top 20, maybe 21st.
Was that the one Alan Head won?
I believe it was. Okay. Yes, that was the one Alan Head won. Well, anyways, I was just killing them on a Carolina rig on the inside grass line. And I took Andy Morgan out in the boat to show him how to find them. And Andy tells this story great. We find this place over in Norris. I think it was in Norris or Coleman. I don't remember. Anyways, I throw a Carolina rig out there, and I'm like, oh, there's one. Set the hook, and it's about a 3-pounder. Randy throws his Carolina rig in there, drags it back to the boat. I throw mine back out there, and I go, oh, there's one. You know, it's a 2.5-pounder. Andy throws his out, and the story, and I would just, like, catch a 3-pounder, a 4-pounder. Andy couldn't hardly get a bite. Well, anyways, that was the joke about it. He's like, Bolton sitting there catching them every cast, and I can't get a bite on this darn thing. Well, anyways, we found 2 or 3 places that day, and I told Andy, I said, here, you take them. You know, I've got plenty of places. You know, we came out here to find you some places. You go fish them. Well, anyways, first day of the tournament, I think I caught 18 or 19 pounds. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I came running by there, one of those places. Well, Andy wasn't there. And I just kept going. Well, that afternoon we got into the weigh-in. Well, Andy had like 5 or 6 pounds. And I'm like, dude, what? You didn't go fish those places? He's like, bah, heck, I went stop. Hey, I couldn't catch them. Well, the next day, Andy said, you go fish them. I'm going flipping. Well, Andy goes flipping the next day and catches, you know, 18 or 19 or 20, whatever it was, a good, really good stringer bass. And he doesn't do real well in the tournament. Now, had he flipped both days, he'd done a lot better. And I'll never forget, Andy took, we're sitting at Twin Docks Marina. He flopped the lids of his Carolina rig box open. It had weights and beads and swivels. And he said, bloop. It went blop, 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 blop. Right there. He said, I'll never do this again. And that was the end of Andy Morgan's Carolina rigging career, whatever year that was.
So you don't think he don't even carry the stuff in his boat to do it?
I would say it'd be hard pressed if you told him you'd give him $1,000 if he could make one. I don't believe he could do it.
Unbelievable! That's awesome. Anyways,
with that being said, I knew the inside grass lines were important.
Yeah.
And the second morning of practice, the first day of practice, I caught 3 bass, 1 flipping, 1 throwing a spinner bait, 1 on a lipless bait. I was not able to find anything good inside grass line where I was at. Went up toward the bridge, found 2 or 3 or 4 places that day inside the grass, and then it died off for me in the afternoon. The third day, I went to Beach Basin. First place I stop on, I catch 2 on back-to-back throws on a crankbait, pick a Carolina rig up, get a bite, leave, find a couple schools of fish before 9:30, 10 o'clock. go from then till 12:30, don't get another bite. I'm thinking, that gum, man, this inside grass line thing seems to get over with early.
Hmm.
You know, the best part of it, which was always typical. I knew that from my previous. I think those shad are up there at night.
Hmm.
They come shallower at night, and then in the sun, you know, they back off. So I kept thinking, well, maybe these darn things have gone to the outside grass line. So about 3:30 in the afternoon, I run back into Harvey Creek, which is where I found the fish that I had found the previous day. And I just say, well, I'm going to get out here on this outside edge of this hydrilla line and just start idling around and look for, just looking. Well, I start idling down the bank, and I'm in about 16, 17 feet of water, and the hydrilla comes up to within, I'd say, you know, 7 foot of the surface. So it's probably 9-10 foot tall hydrilla. And all of a sudden, I see a little, like a little drain going up between a point and an island on my Lake Master. And I idle across the center of this drain just to see what it looked like. Well, when I idled across the center, all of a sudden the grass quit, just like a wall. Whoosh! And it was bare. And then all of a sudden the grass goes whoosh, a wall again. But in that bare area, I look on my down imaging and I see like 20 arches. Mm. And I went, oh my God, that's bass. Well, I take my cursor and scroll back, put a waypoint on it, turn my engine off, drop my trolling motor, kick my boat out toward the deep water, throw a crankbait in the direction of my waypoint, goes down there and comes off a piece of grass, and it just stops and just, you know, and I thought, oh Lord, this is a good one. And I catch about a 6-pound bass. And so I unhook it. I throw back, catch a 2.5-pound bass. And I said, oh, Lord, I found something here. I said, I don't need to throw this crankbait up there anymore. So I reach down, pick a Carolina rig up, throw it in there. Well, the base of this thing had a bunch of that black, mossy, hairy grass. And I couldn't get my – and it got all around my weight, my lizard. I couldn't get a Carolina rig through there. So I pick a crankbait back up, throw up there, catch a big white bass. I throw back, catch another largemouth. I said, I'm getting out of here. And I left. Mm. So I really had no – I mean, I had a – I've looked at a depth finder enough through the years. I know good places. I had a feeling I found something cool. Did I think it was going to be, you know, 33.5 pounds cool?
God.
No. But it ended up, all 54 pounds I weighed come off that place.
2 days.
2 days.
Mm.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And I caught fish other places, but I culled them all out there.
But without that spot, you don't win right there.
Right, exactly.
So hard work without and
that
graphing.
Spot, without that, yes. And like I said, it was kind of, you know, a little bit of dumb luck and being able to read a map.
But it takes that. Tournament like that, I feel like, and not to say dumb luck, really, but because you know what you're doing, but to find that special group, that winning group of fish, it does take a little bit of good fortune. It does,
yes,
but it's
yes,
preparation
it does.
And all that. So you told me, too, you had a big bag, and you're fixing to pull off of them.
Yes, yes. I had around... Well, I had started on my starting spot, caught a limit, gone there the second day, caught 2 4-somethings and a 3.5, and, you know, and early, and then went to a third spot, and of course, knowing I probably already had 17-ish or so, 18 pounds, I already know I'm making the cut for the third day.
So you're comfortable.
And anyways, when I caught those three fish there, a local boat saw me catch him. He was through the trees from me. But when I left, he went out there.
Mm.
But I got to look, and I thought, he's not sitting on it right. He's not even, you know, he's really way on top of him. So I fished another place, and I looked up, and the guy left. So I run back over there about 45 minutes, and, you know, I immediately catch about a 5-pounder. And I cull, and then I catch about a 6-pounder, and I cull, and I'm catching some 2 and 3s in between, and then, lo and behold, I catch an 8-8. Well, 100. By this time, Jody White's coming to me, and they have to take pictures, because they're getting...
The Marshall's,
you know,
texting, and...
Yeah, and, of course, he brings a whole slush of people with him. And so now I got a crowd. well, I'm catching them every cast, and I catch another one, and I'm like, man, I told my marshals, man, I got to be up around, you know, we're sitting there talking. I'm like, man, what do you think I got? He's like, that's an eight. He's like, you know, you got to have around 28. I'm like, yeah, I got to. And I'm like, man, I ought to leave. And I'm like, oh, man, I think I'd stay here and guard this. And I said, well, yeah, but in the meantime, this guy that was there earlier, he's seen this, and he's kind of working his way back over. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, as soon as I leave, he's going to pull back out here. Just
blast him.
And yeah. I said, you know, I might let the air out of these today because you're not guaranteed tomorrow. And I told Jody White, I said, I don't know what to do. And Jody said, why don't you catch a 10-pounder? Like, okay. Well, I throw out there, and I'm catching 2.5-pounders. I catch some 3.5s and 3.75s. And I'm the whole, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, dang, I could really use some of these tomorrow. I got a feeling. And all of a sudden, I hook something, and it comes down the side of the boat, goes past the front of the boat, and keeps going, and starts just pulling like a dadgum catfish. And I've not seen it yet. And I'm thinking, good Lord, what do I have? You know, and I'm fighting it. And the video's on FLW of me catching it. You can kind of see. And, you know, and I fight it. And, of course, and I had caught two on one crankbait earlier in the morning. And my marshal said, well, maybe you got two again. And I'm like, something's not right. I said, it's almost like I got it snagged in the side or something. Well, I didn't. And finally it comes up. Well, I net the bass. It's a 9.8, and I'm culling 5-pounders then, and after that's when I made the decision to leave.
Yeah, so, I guess so. It's hard to get over that hump.
Well, I knew I had over 30,
God.
And I told Jody, I was like, dang, I got to catch like a 5.75-pounder now to, you know, just about, you know, 5.5-ish, 3.25 to help me.
Golly.
So I said, you know, and it was like 1:30, and I elected to leave, and I just went and idled around the rest of the day. So
unbelievable. Well, is that the biggest bag you've ever weighed in a tournament? I know Kentucky Lake, you've probably caught 30-pound bags.
Well, I caught a couple 30-pound bags. The biggest stringer of bass I ever caught was at the East-West Fish Off at Lake Falcon.
Oh, yeah.
I caught five that weighed 38.15.
That's right.
But also weighed in a 37.4. I weighed in 37, 29, 15, and 38, 15 in 3 days.
Unbelievable.
And so, I finished second to Greg Hackney.
So so 33 pounds really wasn't that big of a deal for a baller like that.
No, that's a pretty big deal.
That's because, a big deal.
That was Falcon when Falcon was pretty green.
On fire.
But far as to say that on a fishery, you know, such as a Rayburn that gets fished. It'd be like Gunnersville.
Oh, no doubt. Or Kentucky. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
No doubt about it. Especially in January with the conditions we had and all that.
Right.
So you've been in this over 20 years, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know you over the years, and I think that you're one of the nicest guys, one of the most respected guys out there in the entire fishing industry, and you work hard, you know, promoting for your sponsors, and but you've never got that win. You were close in 06, I believe, at Kentucky Lake,
yeah,
right there. And I know that was at home, and that stung you. But what did that – I mean, I know this is cliche, but was it a – you know, we've all read that you were thinking about
– I was.
About retiring and
– really close. I was probably at the end of St. Clair last year. I was pretty disgusted. Of course, you know, St. Clair, you know, you go up there and catch – you know, 17, 18 pounds a day, and you finish in 100, you know.
And you're mad,
And you're mad, you know. And I mean, but I just didn't fish well last year. I had a lot of irons in the fire, was courting my now wife.
Yep.
I got married this past September. Life is good and settled down. But I still was really considering it. Last year, I don't know why I didn't have fun. I was going through the motions. I was considering it. My wife said, no, you're not going to retire. You're going to go out there. You're going to have fun. You're going to go fishing. And I said, you know, I got to get back to having fun, which that's what I, you know, these kids, these younger guys we have now, I think, you know, and I don't know why older professional bass fishermen, I've had this discussion with a lot of them, and I don't care if it's FLW, bass, MLF, it doesn't matter. seems like the older guys, we start to lose the fun. And I don't know why. The younger, and that's the one thing, the younger, I don't know if it's the wear and tear of the years and uncertainties and things that takes the fun out of it. But I got back to, I never thought about winning the bass tournament all week long. I never thought about winning till right before I walked across that stage. I just had fun. And I remembered the reason I did this wasn't become rich and famous. It's because it's fun.
It started with a bass, catching a bass, yeah, competing, and doing what you love.
Yeah, it's about doing what you love. And for some reason, I tend to lose that. It's like the older I get, I have to self-motivate myself every other year. But, you know, I really never thought about winning. I really never did, even when I caught the 33 pounds. I mean, obviously, everybody that hears this is going, well, yeah, Terry, it's pretty easy to have fun when you catch 33 pounds or you've won the tournament. Yes. But did I think I could, you know, I thought going into the practice, after practice, I thought 15 to 17 pounds a day was my goal.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought I might have a shot at 15. Pretty good, you know. But lo and behold, I figured, you know, it was a tournament I had a little bit figured out in practice, but I really figured it out more in the tournament, which is always what you want to do.
Yes.
And that's always when you have your best events. It's yep. not, you don't want to have it figured out in practice.
Too
it
good.
Goes away in the tournament. Yep. Yeah. So I really, you know, I think another thing too is, you know, I thought too at the beginning of the year, I thought, wow, I'm getting older. You know, I've let these opportunities get away from me and, you know, through the years and, you know, are all my good times behind me? Has this ship sailed? You know, should I be doing this still? And lo and behold, first tournament out, I win. And, you know, like Andy Morgan told me on the phone Monday night after I won, he said, you know, us old guys still got some fight in us.
Ain't no doubt.
You know.
Ain't no doubt. And, I still think experience and age matter in bass fishing very much so. And, you know, the young guys they've got their talents and I think they're definitely all more talented than we were at that age because of the age of information. They know everything.
Sure.
They soak it up like a sponge. It's available to them. But I think that still, like you said, man, I'm back in the 90s. I'm fishing Rayburn. You know, I'm 35 years old, so considerably younger than a lot of the veterans. And, dude, like, I don't have that there, you know.
Right.
I've been to Rayburn a few times, but I don't have that knowledge of, you know, of hard spots and inside edge stuff. And, you know, you hear people talk about it, and I've got buddies out there and stuff, but it's still not something I know. And you had done that before, and that was huge, I feel like.
You
know what you're looking for.
That first Rayburn event I went to, I think Jim Bitter won it on like a 1 ounce spinnerbait on the outside hydrilla line, you know, and, you know, I remembered a lot of that stuff, and the water was high. It was in the bushes, you know, and so that was a big part, you know, and I think too, I got to think, you know, it was pretty special to me, of course, me having so much success through the years at Kentucky Lake. You know, I was always known as a Kentucky Lake guy, you know, and, you know, and I thought, well, good, bad, or indifferent. I never liked that stigma, but I always kind of wanted my first big win to not come here. I wanted to come somewhere else, and it did.
That's awesome.
Because if I win at home, everybody goes, well, you know, he lives there. He should win, you know.
It's his backyard, all that stuff.
You know, it'd be like if, you know, Alex Davis went at Gunnersville.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
If Alex won at Gunnersville, everybody'd say, oh, well, you know, he got here.
Yep.
You know, he should win. Well, no.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat these guys.
Exactly.
So hard to beat them. Well, I know you're excited, man. I'm excited for you. I can't thank you enough for calling and doing this with me. I was watching the weigh-in. I was keeping up on live all day long. And no offense to Nick LeBrun and all that, but man, I was pulling for you, and I know a lot of other people that were, and I'm proud
that you got it done, man.
I
have had a lot of guys, you know, I physically have had so many messages, I've tried to answer them all, and I've answered most of them. I've missed a few, and if I've missed somebody and they're listening, I'm sorry. I tried. Larry Nixon texts me,
he was one
of my childhood heroes.
Yep.
And when I got a text from Larry Nixon, that really made me feel good. Kelly Jordan text me. You
That's
know,
awesome.
I see Kelly about once every few years now, you know, and yep. Kelly was happy for me. And Mark Menendez, who got me started in yep. this, texts me. And, you know, I mean, a lot of old, you know, Mark Harden, Peter T.
That's awesome.
You know, guys that I've known and, you know, guys that some of the guys been out a few years, some guys been out a while, they were all happy to see me do well. And that meant a lot to me because the money will be gone, but the fact that I'm a national champion, that I can always have.
Yep.
You know, I know Wesley Strader posted some really nice stuff for me, and I've known Wesley a long time. And, you know, and fished with Wesley in a Redman event years ago. And, that's another thing. We all want to beat each other. You know, we all want to win.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, we're all happy to see each other do well.
No doubt about it.
I mean, and it was pretty special for me. And, you know, like I said, I feel good this year. Of course, obviously winning a tournament helps. But, you know, just because you won a tournament doesn't mean you're going to have a great year. And my goal is ultimately to make the Forest Wood Cup.
Yep.
And if I don't make the cup, in my eyes, always, I consider my season a failure.
Yep.
So I might have accomplished one long-time goal, but I've still got another goal. That's to be in Hot Springs at Lake Hamilton
yep.
in August.
Yeah, we both got a long way to go. You definitely got a jump start on me because I had a terrible event. But, you know, like I know, you can have a bad one and still make it.
That's
or
right.
even two bad ones anymore with seven tournaments. You just got to catch them. So – well, buddy, I appreciate you calling. I'm super pumped for you, and I'll see you in sunny Florida. I hope sunny Florida.
I hope it's sunny Florida.
I hope so.
I'll see you here or there in about 3 weeks.
Yes, sir. Congratulations, and thank you, dude, so much for calling in.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely, brother. We'll do it again when you win the next one.
Well.
It can happen. Mark Rose did it.
I know. Mark Rose did it.
Don't write it off. It can happen. Guys get on a roll.
I'm going to go have fun again.
That's all that matters.
If I have fun, the rest will follow. You know, like I said, I told somebody the other day, I said, well, you know, God has a plan for all of us. And sometimes God's plan isn't in the same timeline.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Even though we may want it to be.
What was it? Somebody texted me the other day, how to make God laugh, tell him you have a plan.
That's exactly right. But on the other hand, Swindle says God takes care of dumb people. So that's what I'm holding.
Well,
that's what I'm holding out for.
True. My dad used to say that too.
I'm holding out for that. Well, Terry, I appreciate it. Tell your lovely bride I said hello, and we'll see you in Florida.
All right. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Terry Bolton. That was awesome. Really cool right there. I really don't even know what to say. That was awesome. He told me the story about finding those fish in practice, and I was just blown away. But to see a guy, that's such an inspiration to me because, man, I'm 35, and I beat myself up when I have a bad one, and it's going to happen. And this guy's, you know, been out there for years and 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 years. Made cups, you know. Barely missed winning one 12 years ago. And then lo and behold, in 2019, he gets his first win. So amazing. So amazing. But speaking of winning, are you winning? The fight against ethanol? That's right. Startron. Bringing you Low Budget Live. Kicking ethanol in the teeth. Always bringing you Low Budget Live. I think that's going to do it. This week, I really do. Next week, working on some guests. Might actually do an LBL next week, a live, low budget live. Not real sure. Go back and listen to the one with Castledine and Russell Cecil from out there at Rayburn if you haven't. That was a lot of fun. I got to go back and listen to that one. But huge thanks to Terry Bolton. Huge thanks to the Triple Threat who's giving me dirty looks because we got to go to a ball game. But thank y'all the most. Thank y'all. We're going to keep doing it as long as you listen. We're dang sure going to keep doing it. And take care, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.